you know, as Prabhupada is very humble servant, saying or having different gestures. And I think it's that bit only the secretary who would know. So there's so many other things Harisarva Prabhu can talk about. Harisarva Prabhu actually lives in Mayapur, and background is from Australia.
Actually, and I'm from Scunthorpe.
Scunthorpe? In here?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah.
I thought you were from Australia.
I had my second birth in Australia.
Really? And I kept thinking you're from Australia. Well, you're one of us. So now, if you go to Mayapur, all the announcements in the morning, I don't know, they always choose Harisarva Prabhu because they've had other people, but Harisarva Prabhu has the impact, both with the visitors from abroad and the Bengalis. Because when he gets really noisy, which he does there, and he uses his favorite Bengali words to tell them to sit down, and everybody laughs that the person is speaking Bengali. So they wanted two words, but it's magic. I always enjoy meeting you there, and I've also seen your action in GBC meeting rooms, and you know, whatever you have to say, you do say it, and you say it fairly loudly and straightforward. And that's how I noticed you first time. And GBC meeting room can be quite intimidating for newcomers, you know, but those people who are regular, they know they're there for a business, and that is to sort out various issues and whatever. So I always like devotees who can express, you know, both the, you know, positive and the negative, so we stay on the course. And, you know, this has impressed me in the past. I think apart from that, have you done any Kirtan CDs or anything like that? I don't know any background to
no.
that.
Okay, just I've written my books.
Yeah.
I've got five volumes.
We were looking at Maharaj a couple of weeks ago, and there was a whole lot of CDs. I just went there at night. So we're really very happy to have you here, because you're going all over the... You're going to Europe, Belgium, and other places. So 3 days here, and I don't know how you do it, because as you get older, you know, traveling is the last thing you want to do. But that's when you mature to share whatever you've realized and all that. So I would say, let's give a round of applause for doing a wonderful service. Thank you. Thanks very much.
Okay. Is this on? Hare Krishna.
Hare.
I think we need this a bit further out that way.
Is it okay?
That's good. Yeah?
It's okay. Yeah.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Is that okay? Everybody can hear? Good. Okay, so first of all, thank you very much, Haridas Prabhu, and all the other devotees for inviting me to come here. I'm doing a little tour for about 3 weeks. I've already been to Soho Street and Newcastle. So we're here for a couple of days. And I've been presenting this seminar that I've been doing the last couple of years. I've been touring around different yatras and just trying to give the devotees the opportunity to get a little further insight into the life of Srila Prabhupada. The name of the seminar is called Srila Prabhupada, the Living Bhagavatam, Pure Devotional Service by Example. And of course, that's really the catalyst for our spiritual lives, is when we meet a pure devotee and we see how they're practically applying the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. Because all the information is there in the Shastra, but unless we actually have the living examples, then it's very difficult for us to translate what we've read into practical daily life and how to improve our own lives as devotees. So it's very, very important that we enter into the lives of pure devotees and try to understand how they were living the life of the Bhagavatam. So I was fortunate to have joined Prabhupada's personal party at the end of 1975. I was the temple commander in Vrindavan. The temple there had opened at Ram Nami of 1975. I was there for that. Then we'd returned to our various yatras. I was from the Australian yatra. I joined there. But then after a few months, then I got restless and I wanted to go back to Vrindavan. So I got there, I think about the end of July or early August of 75, and I became the temple commander there. Then Prabhupada came for about 3 weeks for Janmashtami, and he stayed through Radhashtami. And when he came, he had about 4 devotees on his party. It was Brahmananda, he was the secretary. Harikesh was his transcriber and cook, and Nitai Das was doing Sanskrit editing, and Upendra Das was his personal servant. Then whilst he was there in Vrindavan, Navayogendra Das Brahmachari at that time, he showed up. He had been in Africa, but there were a few problems there. So he'd left there and he'd come to see Srila Prabhupada. So Prabhupada took him onto his party. So then when Prabhupada left there, Upendra and Nitai, they stayed behind in Vrindavan. Upendra was supposed to go to Fiji and he was waiting for a ticket. And Nitai Das was supposed to help develop the Gurukul, which was just beginning at that time in Vrindavan. So Prabhupada went down to Bombay, and then from Bombay, then he went to South Africa. He made his one and only trip there. And from there he went to Nairobi and to Mauritius. And then he came back to India. And when he arrived back in India, then he decided to dispatch Brahmananda Swami, who was the GBC for Africa, back to Africa, because there were big problems there. And so he was sent back. And to help him, Navayogendra, who had been left behind in Bombay when they went to South Africa, he was given sannyas. So it became Navayogendra Swami. And there was another devotee who had been Prabhupada's personal servant previously, and that was Nanda Kumar. Actually, the first time I saw Prabhupada in person was when he arrived in Sydney on April 2nd in 1972, and he had Shyamasundar Prabhu as his secretary. Nanda Kumar was his personal servant, and Prajumna Prabhu was his Sanskrit editor, so those three came with him. So I'd seen Nanda Kumar very briefly on that visit. Then he had various problems and he left Prabhupada's party. So then in 1975, when Prabhupada came back from Africa to Bombay, that was kind of like early November, then Nanda Kumar just happened to be in India and he turned up in Bombay and he went to see Srila Prabhupada. And Prabhupada asked him, "What are you doing?" So then he explained he was doing this business, selling herbs, buying Ayurvedic herbs and selling them in America. It was rumored that he was selling other kinds of herbs as well. So Prabhupada, when he was told that, he said, "If you do this business, you will go to hell." So Nanda was shocked. Prabhupada was very straight with him. So then he said, "Well, Prabhupada, what should I do?" So then Prabhupada said, "Take sannyas." So he gave him sannyas with Navayogendra. It was to try to save him, actually. And so the two of them were sent with Brahmananda to Africa. So
what was the sannyas name for him?
Not just Nanda Kumar Swami. And so that meant then Prabhupada had no secretary and no servant. Now, Ambarish Prabhu had flown into Nairobi when Prabhupada was there, and he came to India with him, and his purpose was that he was going to help Prabhupada establish a Varnashram college in Kurukshetra, and he had given him $150,000 for that purpose. So Prabhupada came up from Bombay to Delhi, and this was on November 25th, and Hansa Duda flew in from Europe and he became the secretary for that month. And there was still a problem with, you know, getting a servant. So I just happened to be in Delhi for the one day. I'd gone there on some personal business. And in those days we had a very, very tiny temple, much smaller than this one that you have here. That was at 19 Todamal Lane in Bengali Markets. Bengali Markets is a kind of small commercial hub just off of Connaught Place. So we had a very, you know, inadequate, dingy little place. It was the so-called Delhi temple at that time. Tejas was in charge. Tribhuvanath Prabhu was there doing some preaching. Omkara and his wife were there doing the pujari work for Radha Paratasarathi. And that was it. That was the whole yatra. There was about six of them. I think one Indian brahmachari. So when Prabhupada came up to Delhi, he had intended to stay for two or three days. He was going to meet with a man called Gulzarilal Nanda, who was formerly the president of India. Not for a long time, but as a stand-in. And he'd also been the stand-in prime minister when Shastri had died. So he was a big man, but he'd retired from politics by this time. And he had been given some big grants from the government, I think like 1.5 crores, which at that time was about, you know, $1.5 million, to develop the Kurukshetra area. So he was trying to develop the pilgrim facilities there. And Prabhupada had previously met with him and discussed with him about getting some land. So he was due to come to Delhi, meet with Prabhupada, and then Prabhupada was going to go to Kurukshetra with him and see the land there and see what was available. So Prabhupada arrived in Delhi, and he needed a servant. It was an unusual situation. I mean, at that time, Prabhupada had, you know, 4,500 disciples. So, and in India at that moment, there were four former servants. There was Nanda Navayogendra, there was Nanda Kumar, and then in Vrindavan, he'd left behind Nittai and Upendra. So when he arrived in Delhi the same day, then Nittai and Upendra both came in to see Srila Prabhupada. But Upendra had just finally got his ticket for Fiji, and he was leaving in two days' time. And Nittai couldn't stay around because his visa was just running out. So he had to go immediately to Bombay. So somehow or another, despite the fact there were four personal servants around, none of them were available. And as I say, I just happened to be in Delhi. I'd gone there for one day and was intending to return immediately to Vrindavan. But then Gopal Krishna grabbed me. He was an adhikari at that time. And he asked me if I would stand guard at Prabhupada's door. Now, Prabhupada was staying further down the road at Todamal Lane at number 9. They had a little flat there. And I just thought, well, you know, it's a completely unnecessary service, you know, standing guard on Prabhupada's door in Delhi of all places. But I was very happy to do it, because I was thinking, well, I'll sit at the door and naturally I'll get to see Srila Prabhupada. He'll come and go, and, you know, so that was an opportunity. And so I agreed to stay. Then the next day I was sitting in the temple room chanting my rounds, and Harikesh poked his head in the door, and he used to wear these very thick glasses, and he gave me this very intense stare, and he asked me, he said, "Can you do massage?" So I said, "No, I've never done it in my whole life." So then he said, "Well, Upendra's leaving tomorrow to go to Fiji, and Prabhupada doesn't have anybody to massage him. So he's getting his massage right now on the roof. So you have to go up on the roof and see how Upendra's doing it, because you're going to do it tomorrow." And that was it. It was unbelievable. I was, my brain went into a kind of state of suspended, animation. And I actually couldn't believe it was really happening. But I didn't hang around either. I ran out the door, I ran down the road, I ran up the stairs, I got out on the roof, and then sure enough, there was Srila Prabhupada sitting on a mat with his eyes closed, and Upendra was massaging him. So when I got up there, I thought, this is really happening. Prabhupada's actually here. So I offered my obeisances and sat down to watch. And then after about a minute, Prabhupada opened his eyes and he looked at me, and kind of almost with a little bit of surprise, and he said, "Yes." And then I had a doubt, you know, did I really hear what Harikesh said there correctly? Am I supposed to be here or not? So I said, "Well, you know, Harikesh said that Upendra's leaving tomorrow and you need somebody to do your massage, and I had to come up and watch." So he said, "Okay." And he closed his eyes, and that was it. He didn't say anything more. So that I stayed there for an hour. I watched how Upendra was massaging, and Prabhupada got up, he went down to take his bath, and then Upendra took literally 2 minutes to tell me how to do the massage. you know, which oil to use, sandalwood on the head and mustard oil on the body. And then that was it, what order to do, you know, his body in. And then I was told, now, off you go, come back tonight, because there's another massage in the evening. So at that point, I actually didn't even know that Prabhupada had an evening massage. You know, the kind of mood that most of us had, and the impression of Prabhupada that we had was, you know, with a very great deal of awe and reverence. You know, generally speaking, we only saw Prabhupada on the Vyasa set. If you were really lucky, if Prabhupada came to, you know, a temple where you were, you might get out on a morning walk, you know, one morning. And if you were really, really fortunate, you might actually get into Prabhupada's room, you know, for a darshan. In Australia, we used to see Prabhupada, you know, one time a year. He would come for 1 week, and everybody would go, you know, either to Sydney or Melbourne, wherever he was visiting. And that was it for the whole year. So now I was getting this opportunity to, you know, actually get right inside Prabhupada's room and actually massage him. So the whole thing was just like amazing. I actually, you know, couldn't really believe it was happening. And I went there, because I went for the afternoon darshan, and then again I came back in the night time at 9 o'clock. And, you know, I went into Prabhupada's rooms. He was sitting very relaxed. He was having a little prasadam, chit-chatting with Hansa Dutta and Hari Kesh and Upendra. And the whole thing was very informal. And that was, you know, like a whole new world, new experience for me to see Prabhupada in that kind of setting. Just very relaxed and, you know, the formality of being on the Vyasasan, that kind of thing was not there. So about 9:30, Prabhupada had some milk, and then he stood up. He said, "All right, let's go." So he went into the bedroom, and Upendra followed him, and then he signaled, "Come on with me." So I went in, and everybody else took rest. The lights went out. Prabhupada laid down, and that evening massage, that was dry massage, no oil. So Prabhupada remained fully clothed, and it was just from the waist down. His hips, calves, thighs and feet. And Upendra just stood at the side as Prabhupada laid on the bed and massaged up and down. And he told me, he said, "Now, the first time I did this massage, Prabhupada fell asleep." So I thought, "Oh, Prabhupada's sleeping, I'll finish now." So I said, I was just going out. I just got to the door, and then Prabhupada's voice came out from the darkness. "Oh, you were finished?" So he said, "I had to come back and keep on going." So he said, "Even if Prabhupada falls asleep, you have to keep on going until he tells you that you can go." So that first night was 10 minutes, and then Prabhupada just gave a hmm. And then that was it. That was the signal. We left. And Hari Kesh, you know, kicked me out, locked the door behind me. And off I went. So as soon as I came out, I thought, this is unbelievable. And so it just came into my head, I should just write down what's happening here. Because it was meant to be for 2 or 3 days. It was made very clear to me by Hari Kesh, you know, this does not mean you're on Prabhupada's party. You know, you're just here to do the massage, and that's all. And Prabhupada's only going to be here 2 or 3 days, then he's going to go to Kurukshetra, then he's going to go to Vrindavan for 10 days, and when he gets to Vrindavan, somebody else is going to do the massage, so don't get attached. Well, I was happy. I mean, I was more than happy. I was in ecstasy. The whole thing was unbelievable. So I ran down the road. There was a little bookstore on the corner, new janitor bookstore. So I went in and I purchased a blank notebook. And my intention at that point was that I was thinking, you know, I'll write down whatever happens, and then in 10 or 20 years' time, I'll be able to read this and remember all the details of, you know, the opportunity I had to be with Srila Prabhupada. So I started it up right from the very first night. As things transpired, I got actually put onto the party on a full-time basis. There's a whole story involved in that one too, but I won't tell it tonight. But anyway, I got changed from just being the master to being the servant. And my tenure extended, instead of being 2 or 3 days, it ended up being 16 months. So I was on Prabhupada's party up until March of 1977 in one stretch. I think Shrutakirti and myself were the only ones that had that length of a period in one go. Shrutakirti, I think, was the longest serving servant. He had two other spells, and I think he did a total of about 2 years. And the devotee that was with Prabhupada the most, like traveling with his party, was Pradyumna. I don't know for sure, but I think Pradyumna probably had about 4 years at least traveling on Prabhupada's party, although he wasn't doing any of the kind of personal service that the secretary and servant was doing. He was just doing the Sanskrit editing. But anyway, so it was an extended period. And so I kept up this diary the whole time that I was with Prabhupada. And about halfway through, I started to realize that, you know, this is not just for me. This is actually for, you know, this is a historical event. You know, Prabhupada's appearance and his preaching. And Prabhupada even told me that when we were traveling from Allahabad after the Kumbh Mela, or during the Kumbh Mela in 1977. We were there for a few days. Then Prabhupada went by train to Calcutta overnight. Rameshwar had come on as his secretary for that month. And in the middle of the night, they were talking. And Prabhupada told us, he said, history will mark this period when the Krishna consciousness movement came about. So Prabhupada saw it. He had a historical perspective on what he was doing. And I'd also, you know, realized that keeping a record of Prabhupada's activities, who he was seeing, what he was saying, where he was going, what he was doing, it was very, very important, you know, as a historical document. So I was carefully keeping a diary. And of course, we were recording as much of Prabhupada's speech as possible, his classes, his conversations, etc. So with the combination of the written diary and the electronic diary, and then of course there was a lot of correspondence as well. Prabhupada used to answer on average maybe 5 or 6 letters a day. So with that correspondence added to it, there's a tremendous body of information about Srila Prabhupada, but in a very kind of intimate way as well, also daily basis, seeing what he was doing and everything that he was saying, and you know, people he was meeting. So after Prabhupada's disappearance, this was in 1978, I was in Vrindavan, and Tamal Krishna Maharaj was with me, and because he had come onto the party just when I was leaving in 1977, and the day that I left Mayapur, I suddenly realized, now who's going to keep up, you know, this diary business? So I went to see Tamal Krishna Maharaj and I told him, I said, you know, I've been keeping this diary. Now I'm leaving, so you have to keep this up. So then he was saying, oh, I'm too busy, you know, secretary's, you know, got so many things to do. Prabhupada was very sick at that time. It was when he first got really sick, and he never really recovered from that illness that he came down with at Mayapur in 1977. So he was very busy. So he said, oh, you know, I'm not going to have the time. And so I pressed him. I said, Maharaj, this is really, really important. I said, you have to do this. If you don't do this, then we'll lose all the information, you know, about Prabhupada's activities. And this is a really important period. I said, if you look back, I said, what do we know from when, you know, so many other servants and secretaries were traveling with Prabhupada? All those activities are lost because nobody wrote them down. I said, you have to do this. So I said, oh, well, you know, maybe. So that was as much as I could get out of him at that time. So I went back to Australia. Prabhupada had made me the GBC there. And then somehow or another, later on, Tamal Krishna Maharaj did click into gear with that. If you see his TKG's diary, that begins, I think, about mid-April. So it was about a month after I told him. So then finally, it seemed something clicked, and then he started to write his diary down. And he kept that up until the end of Prabhupada's appearance with us. So at least that last couple of years, we have, you know, quite detailed record of Srila Prabhupada's life. And in 78 then, we were in Vrindavan together, And Tamal asked me, he said, so what are you going to do with your diary? So I said, well, I'm going to publish it. So he said, why? So I said, because I just feel that, you know, I was very fortunate to have that intimate association with Srila Prabhupada, and I think that all the other devotees would want to share that. You know, they're also Prabhupada's disciples. It's not like, you know, it should be exclusive, but I think that everybody should get the opportunity to have the same experience. So I'm going to write it into a book. So then I said, what are you going to do with your diary? So then he laughed. He said, I'm not going to publish it. So I said, Maharaj, you know, you have to share this with the other devotees. You can't just keep it to yourself. So he said, no, but he said, there's things in there that, you know, they're a little either personal or private, you know. So he said, I don't think that some of that should be published. So I said, well, anyway, at least publish what there is that you think is fit to be published. So then he laughed. He said, anyway, he said, if I do it, he said, I won't do it until you've finished yours. So that we left it at that. Fortunately, he did publish his diary in 98 or 99, before I got mine finished. And it's just as well that he did, of course, because now he's no longer with us either. So we're very fortunate that we have that diary available. I am still working on mine. I actually got the first volume out. I started work on it in 86. It was about 10 years after I'd first been with Prabhupada. 85, end of 85. I suddenly woke up and I realized it's been 10 years since I joined Prabhupada's party, and I still haven't done anything with this diary. Although I'd been collecting from the archives various materials, but I'd not actually sat down and done it. So from that point I started doing something. And then in 92 I got the first volume out. And then I got three more volumes out by 96. Then I took a break, which I thought was going to be for a year, but it turned out to be 6 years before I got back to it. Writing is not an easy occupation. At least I find it so anyway. It's very difficult to sit down and concentrate. And I was amazed when I saw Prabhupada writing, you know, every night from midnight through till 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning without fail, every single night. But I really didn't appreciate, you know, the effort that was going into that writing until I started trying to do some writing myself. You know, when you actually have to do the same thing, then you realize, you know, what it takes. So, anyway, somehow or another, I got the fifth volume out last year, and now I'm working on the sixth volume, and altogether there'll be seven, and that will kind of conclude that series. That's called the Transcendental Diary. I think many of you will have seen the volumes. We've got some boxes up there at the back there. And so this seminar, Srila Prabhupada, the Living Bhagavatam, is a compilation, but by topic, from the period that I was with Prabhupada, and rather than it being a chronological presentation as the diary is, it's a presentation by theme. So I've taken different topics like prasadam, or chanting, or health, or living in the Dham, or book writing, etc., etc. And anything that Prabhupada said or did in relation to that topic, I put it all together and tried to put it into some kind of order. And each module, it generally takes me about anywhere between 4 and 7 hours to, you know, to present it. That means usually, you know, like if we have an hour tonight, so we've got what, 2 more nights after this? Yeah. So we might get halfway through one of the modules. But anyway, it's all Prabhupada nectar. That's the whole point. And I think that you'll find it very enlivening to get some more intimate understanding and insights into Srila Prabhupada's activities. And as I say, it's pure devotion by example. The more we enter into Prabhupada's activities, then the more we understand what real spiritual life, what real Krishna consciousness is. And especially relevant because Prabhupada was practicing, you know, in the modern context. You know, we can read about the life of the acharyas and, you know, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, etc. But Prabhupada is right there now. You know, it's the same circumstances that we're in. So there's much that we can learn from that. So anyway, we did actually, after being in Delhi, we did go to Kurukshetra for one day. And I got my chance to have my first, you know, experience of traveling with Srila Prabhupada. And then the next day, on December the 2nd, then Prabhupada went to Vrindavan. So, and then that, it was at, on that first day in Vrindavan that Prabhupada told Harikesh, now he can be made the full-time servant. And I moved right into Prabhupada's quarters. So the first instruction that I got from Srila Prabhupada, he had, after his lunch, had gone up onto the roof of his quarters. There's a small room up there, and Prabhupada used to like to go up there every day, and he would either sit in the sunshine or he would take his nap after breakfast or after lunch. So he'd gone up there, I went up with him, and when he entered the room, there was a small mat just outside. So he pointed to the mat and he said, now, he said, you sit, I'm going to take rest, you sit here. He said, now your only business is to be with me 24 hours. So that was my first instruction from Prabhupada. Very nice instruction. And I hope that I can fulfill that. He didn't put a time limit on that one. So anyway, in the afternoon, I was just sitting with Prabhupada quietly. And I got this very, very clear and strong realization about being with Prabhupada, the advantage of being with Prabhupada. You know, this was my first opportunity to be with him 24 hours, to be in his room at all times when he was there. So I wrote this down. It's extremely pleasurable to be with Srila Prabhupada during these quiet moments. He is gentle and mild in his manner and completely fixed and steady in his devotion to Krishna. He has tremendous strength and force, but is devoid of passion. His presence is totally dominating without being at all domineering. His mind is steady and his senses are controlled effortlessly. His intelligence is perfectly clear and he knows how to act and how others should act in every situation. His presence thus makes spiritual life a reality. Watching him today, it struck me that he is a living, breathing Bhagavatam. Whatever description of Krishna consciousness is in his books, he himself is that. Reading his books brings gradual realization, but what is understood in perhaps several lifetimes of study is revealed on a second-to-second, minute-to-minute, and day-to-day basis in Prabhupada's personal association. I have therefore resolved within myself to learn as much as I can whilst I have this matchless opportunity to observe him closely. Simply watching Prabhupada in his daily activities, how he deals with devotees, how he responds to different situations, how he preaches, how he manages the worldwide affairs of his ever-expanding society, how he relaxes, how he continually pushes forward the movement of Lord Chaitanya, and how absolutely every facet of his being is fully Krishna conscious, it is quite feasible then to understand the full import of the sacred scriptures. By studying and preaching, one may make steady advancement, but at least for me, although I have full faith in Krishna consciousness, many ideas and principles are still only intellectually perceived, but not yet fully realized. But by observing Srila Prabhupada, I can see that they are a natural, integral part of his very being. So that was just a very strong realization that I got, that here's Srila Prabhupada. He is the personification of Krishna consciousness. He's the personification of the Bhagavatam. All I have to do is just be there and look and observe as much as possible. So I tried to take as much advantage of that as I could. And virtually speaking, if you were with Prabhupada, you got the opportunity to hear him speaking at least 4, 5, 6 hours a day, every single day. You know, for the morning walks, for his Bhagavatam classes, his meetings in his rooms with guests and general darshans, meetings with his managers, discussing how to, you know, conduct the preaching activities, and even just, you know, when you were alone with Prabhupada, sometimes in the night time when I was giving him his massage, he would chit-chat for a little while about things that had happened during the day, or just some philosophical, you know, idea that he wanted to discuss. And his correspondence, you know, hearing the secretary read the letters out. Prabhupada didn't read the letters himself, but the secretary would read the letters out, and Prabhupada would dictate the reply, and then the secretary would type them up. So I got to hear, you know, those exchanges also. So it was just a very wonderful opportunity. So this idea of the living Bhagavatam, that was also expressed by Srila Prabhupada himself. I'd been with him about seven or eight months by this time. And Prabhupada was in New Mayapur in France. This was on August the 5th of 1976. He'd just been here in England, and then he went over to France. So whilst we were here in England, on the 26th of July, Bhagavan Das came over and presented Srila Prabhupada the first French translation of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So Prabhupada naturally was very, very happy to see that. It was the first canto, first part. So when we went to France, then Prabhupada was introduced to this man, Professor François Chanique. He had written a very favorable review of Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita, Tel Calais. And now he saw the Bhagavatam, so he was very happy about that. And he came to see Prabhupada whilst we were out at New Mayapur. He was a very nice man, actually. He came, he was wearing a dhoti, and he had tilak, and he had japamala hanging around his neck. He was a professor at the university, Frenchman, but very nice. So he appreciated the devotees, although he said, "I'm not a devotee." He said, "I'm more an impersonalist." You know, he was just on his way, actually, to a Buddhist retreat for the weekend. But out of respect, you know, he dressed as a devotee, and Prabhupada liked that. And he said, "Actually, that you're saying that you're not a devotee, that means you are a devotee." Because that's what a devotee is. He said, "That's good, that's very nice that you're saying that." Anyway, so the preliminary introduction's done. Professor Chanique said that he was keen to see Prabhupada's Bhagavatam come into use. There is only one of the French translation of it, which had been done in the 1800s, and that has no commentary. Yet, he said, at the university level, the French are meticulous about maintaining the grammatical standards of their language. He was politely concerned that our translations should not smell of English, as he put it. Because that's the, you know, the French are obsessed with keeping out any anglicization of their language. He felt that since our books are translated from English, the French literary expression is not always exactly correct. Describing French as a more compact language than English, I don't know where he got that from. He wondered whether it might not be better to translate directly from the Sanskrit into French. Srila Prabhupada was not very concerned. While acknowledging that if possible improvements could be made in future editions, he explained that as yet no French devotee had become a Sanskritist. And besides that, he said, it's not a question of scholarship. The translator must be a realized soul. He said that although there are many Sanskrit scholars in India, they cannot understand the Srimad Bhagavatam. He must be French, expert in language, and at the same time a devotee, Prabhupada said. Then he can explain. Otherwise, no. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's secretary, Swarup Damodar, he asked that Bhagavat Padagya Bhagavat Stane, you go and study the Bhagavat from the Bhagavat. So I have discussed this in the beginning of the translation of the Bhagavat. Jai Shushi Sachinandan Nitai Chan Ki Jai. Go and study the Bhagavat from the Bhagavat. So this Bhagavat, that is the limit of education. Vidya Bhagavata Vidhi. One has to study and take education up to the Bhagavatam. That is, if one understands the Bhagavatam, then he has finished his education. The professor assured Prabhupada that he wasn't in any way criticizing, but he was concerned that Prabhupada got the widest possible audience. He felt that an improvement in the way that the French editions were written would ensure that. Prabhupada appreciated his concern, but he continued to stress his point. That is from the scholarship point of view, he said, but our point is that this Bhagavat must be presented by the Bhagavat. and there is not much scholarship required. Just like the Bhagavat begins with the words Janmadhyasya Jata. So this Sanskrit word means the absolute truth is that from where everything emanates. Now, the absolute truth further explained, Anvayaditaratascha Abhigyasvarat. That absolute truth is aware of everything, directly and indirectly, of all of this creation. So in this way, if you step-by-step study, it is not a very difficult thing, so far as the word meanings are concerned. But it is a question of realization. Unless one is realized, he cannot explain properly, and that is the secret. Therefore, we have given the life of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in our Bhagavatam, because he is the living Bhagavatam. So that was nice, Prabhupada explained that. So as Lord Chaitanya was the living Bhagavatam, Srila Prabhupada was also a living Bhagavatam as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's representative. And, you know, I don't think Prabhupada would mind us saying that he's the best representative since Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, because he did something unprecedented that no one has done before. Because every acharya does something unique. And we can't say that one is better than the other. But at the same time, by the blessings of the previous acharyas, then one may do something very wonderful. And Srila Prabhupada certainly did something extraordinarily wonderful. So Prabhupada is a living Bhagavatam. And our conviction is that if we hear about Srila Prabhupada's activities, then we'll get some unique and very deep insights into Krishna consciousness, and that will help us to perfect our own attempts of becoming, you know, pure devotees, which is what our aim is eventually. Yeah, we're trying at least. We can't say that we've got there, but we're trying. So anyway, as I say, I've got different topics. Usually what I do is I ask the devotees to pick a topic, but I'm not going to do that this evening. I'd like to, with your permission, I'd like to speak about Prabhupada's writing, because everything depends on Prabhupada's books. Prabhupada said that. Books are the basis. If you don't read Prabhupada's books, you'll never know what Krishna consciousness actually is about. And Prabhupada himself said that that was his most important activity. Creating temples and a worldwide movement was incidental to Prabhupada's writing his transcendental purports for the Srimad Bhagavatam. They came as a result of that. And Prabhupada himself expressed that many times, that my real business is writing. So you all manage everything and let me retire. And he was saying that from, you know, like 1968 practically onwards. Just let me retire, you take up the preaching work. Because he didn't retire until, you know, he was forced to. Yeah, in 1977, he became physically incapacitated and it became impossible for him to do any further preaching work. And that was when he changed from his preaching leela into his Nirjana Bhajan leela. But, you know, Prabhupada put tremendous effort into his writing, and that was the fulcrum of the establishment of the Krishna consciousness movement. So it's very important for us to understand what was Prabhupada's inspiration for doing that, and his qualification also. You know, sometimes people have questioned that, so we need to look at that. The more we know about that, then the more confident that we can be. Because we're already confident. You read Prabhupada's books, you can't help but become Krishna conscious. But, you know, sometimes when we get deeper understandings, that helps us. It gives us more confidence in accepting Prabhupada's words. So, December the 5th, 1975, I was with Prabhupada. I'd just, you know, like I say, gotten onto the party. And Prabhupada got a letter from Rameshwara Das, who was the head of the American division of the Book Trust. So he was reporting a recent new record in book distribution. So in a one-day competition, which I think was Thanksgiving's Day, in America that's a very big holiday, and millions of people, they fly home just for that one day. It's almost one of the, you know, the main holidays of the year. Here in England we don't celebrate it, but there it's a big event. So they'd have this one-day competition between three temples, Los Angeles, Atlanta, and Chicago. And between them, he reported that they had sold 5,406 hardbound books on the one day, with some individual devotees selling over 200 books each. Ramaswara's report was dramatic. "Our men are willing to do anything to please you," he said, "and all of them have dedicated their whole lives to distributing these books. Our only desire is that you may kindly bless us with greater and greater desire to distribute these books all over the world until every home has whole libraries of your books. By your divine grace's blessing, we will never stop distributing these books. We are thinking that this is the highest pleasure in all the three worlds." Mm-hmm. Prabhupada's response was equally enthusiastic. "Your report of book sales is over-encouraging. You are all becoming very, very dear to my Guru Maharaj. I started this movement by book selling. I was never a beggar for money, but I was writing books and selling. My Guru Maharaj very much liked my writing, and he used to show to others in my absence, 'Just see how nicely he has written, how he is appreciated.' He encouraged me, and my godbrothers, they also liked my writing. After I wrote that poem for Vyasa Puja of my Guru Maharaj, they used to call me poet." That was that famous poem, "Adore, adore ye all the happy days, blesser than heaven, sweeter than May." "So anyway, I was working, writing books and publishing BTG alone, but I could not give the thing shape. So I decided to go to the USA. Now all you nice boys and girls have helped me so much. It is all the mercy of Krishna. Thank you very much." So that was Prabhupada expressing his appreciation, but he was saying right from the very beginning, he was recognized by his spiritual master for his writing. And in fact, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Prabhupada said, had told the editors of their magazine, I think the Gaudiya Patrika, that whatever he writes, you publish. Yeah, you don't have to check it or anything or show it to me, you just publish whatever he writes. So he had got that recognition as a writer. And of course, Prabhupada was writing in English. That was another salient point that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta had noted right from the very beginning, that you are educated man, you know English, so you try to give this message to the English-speaking people. So that was Prabhupada's theme and his instruction. Interesting thing is that later on, when Prabhupada's books were put out in Bengali, although because Prabhupada was from Calcutta, they were actually translated from the English into Bengali. Yeah, he didn't write in his own native tongue because his spiritual master told him, "You write in English." So he was doing that. So Prabhupada was recognized. It's not just that after he came to the West that his writing was recognized, but right from the beginning of his spiritual life it was recognized. And actually even before that, as we'll see in a moment. But I mentioned this new French Bhagavatam that came out on July 26th. Bhagavan Prabhu and Putraputa Swami had arrived from France. We were at the manor. Prabhupada saw them in the early evening. So that was the same day actually that George Harrison had come to see Srila Prabhupada, and that was the last meeting that George had personally with Srila Prabhupada. So he came in the afternoon, then these devotees came in the evening. So they brought samples of the new French Bhagavatam, first canto, first part. Prabhupada said, "My Guru Maharaj is very pleased. As soon as a book comes out, he is pleased. He was lamenting that these men, they do not publish any number of books." He's talking about the other disciples. "They are simply after these stones and bricks, temples. He condemned. He was very, very sorry. So I thought that I must take a risk, and he is pleased." Now, Prabhupada's talking in the present tense. That's, you'll see why in a minute. "So now you have books and temples," Bhagavan said. Prabhupada smiled. He said, "Yes, temple is automatically. I never stressed on temple. I was engaged in publishing Back to Godhead. Whatever I could do, I did it because I took it very seriously, that he is very sorry that these things were not done." He said that there will be fire in this Gaudiya mat. Agunjvalbe, he said. Amari tachi loka kichui boy kakarebo, kakarebo, Sorry, I can't speak Bengali, as you noted. I live in Bengal, but I can't speak, unfortunately. If I can, I shall sell the marbles of this temple and convert them into books. This was a statement that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta made after they had been given this wonderful new temple at Bagh Bazar in Calcutta. It was all marble. Previously, they'd just been living in some rented places. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta had said that we were happy when we were living in that rented place and just going out and preaching. So now we've got this big temple. All they're doing is fighting and arguing who will get which room. So he said, if I could take the marble from this temple and sell it and use the money to print books, I would do that. So he told that personally to Srila Prabhupada in 1935 when Prabhupada had gone to spend, I think, about 10 days with him in Radhakund. And Prabhupada made all of these comments and many other significant comments as well. So that was his ambition. He started a nice press, and this Tirtha Maharaj sold it. That was Prabhupada's godbrother. He sold it. Jayatirtha asked in surprise. Jayatirtha at that time was the GBC here. Yes, Prabhupada said. He is not representing Guru. He thought, better let us have the money for fighting in court. Sometimes I'm sorry that my name has this word in it, Jayatirtha said a little ruefully. Prabhupada paused a moment and then he offered him a word of comfort and encouragement. He said, you are Jayatirtha, victorious. Now, whatever is being done, it is by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta's blessings. So let us work sincerely. These things will all be done. Otherwise, it is humanly impossible. It is by his grace. Jayatirtha said that George was also commenting that how one man could have written so many books. He could not even read them all, what to speak of writing them. Prabhupada quoted a Sanskrit verse, Mukham Karoti Vachalam Pangam Langayate Gurim Yakripa Tamaham Vande Sri Gurum Dinatarinam. A dumb is a great orator. The lame man can jump over a mountain. Yakripa, by the mercy of Guru, it is possible. So, let us cooperate and do this business. The higher authority will be pleased, and that is our success. Yashya Prasada Bhagavat Prasada. If the higher authorities are pleased, then Krishna is pleased, and that is our success. Now, there'll be more about this higher authority that Prabhupada's speaking about there later. But Prabhupada was not speaking, of course, figuratively there. He was speaking quite literally. So, anyway, looking at Prabhupada's history of writing.
You have to turn it on because it doesn't record very well the other way.
Even before he got recognized by his Guru Maharaj in the 1930s, Prabhupada had gotten recognition for his writing. So on January the 12th, 1976, he was in Calcutta, and Jayapataka Swami reported that a small Bengali book entitled Gita Gan, which Srila Prabhupada had written before going to the West in 1965, is now in print and is selling many copies. Containing all the Gita verses in Bengali rhyme, it was written in such a way that no one can misinterpret the meaning. Prabhupada was very pleased to hear that all the Mayapur Gurukul children are studying it and learning to chant the verses. Similarly, he recalled how his godbrothers used to call him Kavi, or poet, and that even at school, he said, he could write English verse. So that was a recollection. Because this Gita Gan, it was a small book, but Prabhupada had taken all the verses of the Bhagavad Gita from the Sanskrit and then put them into rhyming Bengali. And he said, I wrote it so that it cannot be misinterpreted, like the Mayavadis misinterpret the Sanskrit. But the way he wrote the Bengali, you can only come to one conclusion. So in 76 and 77, when Prabhupada was staying in Mayapur, I remember every morning, all the little Gurukul boys, they would come marching down from the front wall down to the Lotus building where the temple was, and they'd all be in file, and one of them would be singing very loudly at the top of his voice. It's like the American Marines, you know, and they all chant. Yeah. So one of them was singing out one of the verses from the Gita Gan, And then all the other little boys, they would all chant in unison in response, and they would come, marching down. Prabhupada liked it very much. Sometimes he would watch, and he would smile like anything to hear them. So anyway, he said there that even at school he could write English verse. So later on, August the 21st, 1976, Prabhupada was in Hyderabad. He had just opened the temple there, new temple. And Jayapataka Swami and Gagamuni Swami had flown over from West Bengal to give a report on Mayapur. So especially pleasing to Srila Prabhupada was the news of the sales of his Bengali language book, Gita Gan. The sannyasis said that everywhere they went, people were asking for it, and some devotees were selling up to 200 at a time. It was becoming so popular that when Jayapataka went to Writer's Building in Calcutta on business about the land acquisition for Mayapur, the workers there were approaching him to buy copies of Gita Gan. Writer's Building is like the bureaucrat. It's where the chief minister sits. He has his office and like that. Jayapataka said the only difficulty was that we lacked Prabhupada's books in the local languages. So to rectify this, he has set up a team to begin translating the English books into Bengali. The translators are Subhag Das, who's now Subhag Swami, Tatpur Das, and a new devotee, Kishore, a freelance writer and former honors student from the Calcutta University. Kishore later on became Chirachara Gopinath, who later on became Bhakti Charu Swami. Yeah, so that was, he just joined at that time. So he was immediately engaged in translating Prabhupada's books into Bengali. Jayapataka Swami personally reads through what they have done to make sure that there are no philosophical errors. Gagamuni said that it was difficult to get Hindi or other Indian language translations done, and Prabhupada agreed. He said, impersonal idea is in everybody's head. God has no legs, no head, simply he, the translator, he has got a head. Prabhupada said that even the Aryan translation of the topmost yoga system done by Gaur Govinda Maharaj, which Gagamuni Swami had brought with him, should wait for publication until someone could check that it was up to standard. Prabhupada told Jayapataka to locate another work that he had done in the 1940s, written in Bengali, called Bhagavana Katha. He had written it as a series of articles for the Gaudiya newspaper, which was produced by the Devananda Gaudiya Mat. Unpretentiously, Prabhupada said, they were so popular that the report was that the readers of the Gaudiya were only hankering after that Bhagavana Katha. After reading that, then they will throw the newspaper away. Other articles, they were not interested. So always, your writing, people were attracted by, Jayapataka Swami said appreciatively. Yes, that's a fact, Prabhupada said modestly. Even my teachers were attracted in my school days. In my matriculation class, I wrote some essay, and I got out of 100, 85 marks. But the teacher came into the class. Who has written this? So I stood up, and he thanked me. Yes, this is very nice. So he especially came to thank me for that essay. So Prabhupada was an expert writer, right from his, childhood days. He could write essays, and he could write verse in English. And then, of course, for the work that he had to do later on, then he needed another qualification, and that was, of course, he had to know Sanskrit. So he mentioned this when we were in Toronto in June of 76. Some professors had come to see him on the 17th of June. There was Joseph O'Connell, Shiva Raman, and a couple of others. So they come from the University of Toronto. And we were chatting in Prabhupada's room. So the conversation ranged over a number of interesting topics, with Srila Prabhupada sharing his unique insights into social life, history, education, and culture. He inquired about the progress of our Gurukul, since this is now Jagadish's only portfolio. Jagadish was the local GBC. And so Prabhupada was talking with him about the Gurukul. Sorry, this is not when the professors came. That was later on. This was just a chat with Jagadish. So Prabhupada was expressing his doubts about the standard of teaching in the Gurukul. He informed Jagadish that in Los Angeles, Pradyumna had complained that his six-year-old son, Aniruddha, who was in the Gurukul there, could not write from 1 to 10. Pradyumna also claimed that the Sanskrit level was poor. Prabhupada said he had personally observed in Dallas that the students could not chant the Sanskrit nicely, although it was simply a question of practice, he said. So you see, to these two things especially, English is the mother tongue, mother language, so they can become English scholar very easily. And Sanskrit language is no difficulty. Read and write, then he will learn. Now, our education in Sanskrit was in college, he's talking about himself. Of course, I was the best student in my class in Sanskrit. I was standing first. But we are not like the so-called Sanskrit scholars. For our purpose, we can read and write, that's all. Similarly, we don't want any very learned scholars, Sanskrit grammarian, to manufacture jugglery of words and meanings. No, we don't want that. So that was, Prabhupada said there, that he was the top of his class in Sanskrit. So that was his qualification. He was well prepared, Srila Prabhupada. Even before he met Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, he was an expert writer, and he knew these languages. So later on, in July of 76, Prabhupada had an interview with Kevin Lehart. He was a reporter from Newsday magazine, and a very nice man. Prabhupada warmed to him immediately. Very intelligent guy. He could write shorthand, so he was writing everything down that Prabhupada wrote, which Prabhupada spoke, which Prabhupada liked a lot. And Kevin asked him, he said that, "You came here 10 or 11 years ago, so you were almost 70 at the time. So what had you been doing previously?" Previously, Prabhupada said, "I was a family man. I retired in 1954. My Guru Maharaj asked me to take up this task seriously when I was 25 years old. So at that time, I was a family man, and I thought, let me adjust my family affairs, then I shall take it. So by doing the adjustment, it took me long years." So I retired at the age of 58. So that means from 25 until 58, Prabhupada said he was making the adjustments. Then I took it up seriously. And then when I was 70 years old, then I came here. "Were you a businessman?" Kevin asked. "Yes, I was connected with some chemical industry. I was a manager in a big chemical industry. Then I started my own business. And in this way, I was a family man." Rameshwar and Bali Mardan explained that throughout Prabhupada's life, he was Krishna conscious, and that even as a householder, he was writing. And Prabhupada told him, "Yes, this Back to Godhead, that was started in 1944, when I was still a family man." So that was the first serious writing that Prabhupada did, because he was writing articles, but a whole publication that started with Back to Godhead. And there was an interesting incident that happened when we were in Washington in 76, in July. We'd gone there for the July the 4th festival, American Independence. That year was the 200th anniversary, so it was a big do. So the devotees had decided Prabhupada should be in the capital of America, you know, for their Independence Day. So then on the 7th of July, Swarup Damodar presented Srila Prabhupada a Xerox copy of the very first Back to Godhead, which had been published in 1944. They had discovered it in the Library of Congress. A group of four or five devotees had gone there to search out a copy of the Surya Siddhanta and other astronomical literature. So Prabhupada was just forming the Bhaktivedanta Institute at that time. Swarup Damodar was there, Rupanuga was there, Sariputta was there, Madhava was there. There were several, like, scientists. They were all gathered there. And Prabhupada was giving them some instructions on how they should begin their work. So he'd said, "Now, we want this planetarium to be built in Mayapur. So if you can explain how all the movements of the moon and the sun and the coming of day and night and eclipses and etc. from the fifth canto," he said, "that will be very powerful propaganda work." So he advised them, "You find out this Surya Siddhanta," which Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati had commentated on. And so they'd gone to the Library of Congress. So although they didn't find that book, most of Prabhupada's books were there. Pradyumna was looking through the index and he discovered the BTG. Srila Prabhupada was surprised to see it, and he said that it may have been sent to the library by his Calcutta distributor, who was the biggest in Bengal. He told us that it had been printed on first-class paper by the best printer in Calcutta, Saraswati Press, and it was released on the Vyasa Puja day of his spiritual master. So actually in that first edition, Prabhupada got two editions out in 1944. Then for some reason or another he wasn't able to publish again until about 1952. But anyway, that first copy was there. And later on we were in New York the following month, and Kint and Anda had come to see Srila Prabhupada. He was going out in a morning walk in the car on the 17th of July. So Kint and Anda talked about Lord Krishna's daily gift in charity of over 13,000 opulently decorated cows to the brahmanas. He said that it was inconceivable. But then he said, actually it's inconceivable that we're going to distribute 1 million back to Godheads this month. Because just 10 years ago, Prabhupada had started up back to Godhead again when he was in 26 Second Avenue. Prabhupada smiled, and he recalled how they were printing 500 copies on a mimeograph machine. He smiled even more broadly as Rameshwara Maharaj informed him that for the Christmas marathon this year, the BBT intends to print 2 million copies of Back to Godhead. "It is all Krishna's mercy," Prabhupada said. "You have seen that first copy?" he asked Kirtanananda. Pushta Krishna Swami described what they had found in the Library of Congress. "It's very thick. It was like a thick magazine." Prabhupada said, "In those days I was spending 300 rupees a month." Tamal Krishna Maharaj said, "That was a lot." "Yes," Prabhupada said, "300 rupees, nowadays at least 10 times that amount." So Tamal calculated, "Well, that's at least 3,000. I think perhaps even more, Srila Prabhupada." "Yes, not less then." "So say $500 a month, Kirtanananda asked. "And I was not getting any return," Prabhupada said. "How are you getting so much money?" Tamal asked him. "My income from my business," Prabhupada said. So that was how Prabhupada was spending his money. He was trying to produce his Back to Godhead magazine. That was his first attempt at preaching. He'd never been out of India. He'd never been to an English-speaking country, but he was printing an English magazine in the middle of India. So he got two issues out in 1944, and then the next two issues, 1952. So later in the year, we were in Vrindavan. I was sitting in Prabhupada's room with him. It was just the two of us. And on October the 3rd, somebody had given me a photograph of Prabhupada when he took sannyas. He was there with Keshava Maharaj and one of the godbrother. So this morning I showed Srila Prabhupada the photo taken of him on the day that he accepted sannyas. He is standing to the right in the photo, and a godbrother is seated in the center, and another sannyasi is standing to the left. Prabhupada smiled when he saw it, but he didn't think that it was such a good photo. He told me that he had taken sannyas from the godbrother in the center, Keshava Maharaj, who was the same age as himself. The other devotee was older, and he had also taken sannyas on the same day. Prabhupada got the name Bhaktivedanta Swami, and the other one got the name Bhaktivedanta Muni Maharaj. So he was told he was about 90, that godbrother, when he took sannyas. So it was an opportunity for me to relish Prabhupada's earlier pastimes, which I loved to do, and I took as much advantage of it as I could. I asked whether, as Hari Kesh Maharaj had told me, that Prabhupada had been gored by a cow the day before he took sannyas. Prabhupada laughed and he shook his head. That incident, he said, had occurred in Delhi in 1956, 3 years before. He had stopped, he was in Chandni Chowk, and he'd stopped to pet a calf, and then the mother attacked him and gored him in the stomach and knocked him flat on his back. Prabhupada told me, he said, when I got knocked down, he said, the first thing that came into my head was that, oh, am I being punished for leaving my family? And then he said, but immediately, he said, I thought about Rupa and Sanat and Goswamis. He said, then I was all right. So Prabhupada laughed. He said that he was in an amiable mood. He said that he was living in Delhi in those days as a Vanaprastha. But he said, my paper, that was going on, back to Godhead. In Delhi, I was alone. I was doing everything. Editing, selling, collecting, cooking. So I looked it up in the folio, actually. And I saw that in 1956, Prabhupada got 12 issues, continuous. Then in 1958, two more issues. And then in 1960, 11 issues. So it was kind of sporadic. Prabhupada was putting a lot of effort into it, though. You know, that was his main writing up until 1958. After that point, then he started with books. So in January the 20th, 1976, in Mayapur, Prabhupada told us about when he started writing books. So in the evening, His Divine Grace told us more about his life before establishing ISKCON. He explained that when he began publishing Back to Godhead, many people had appreciated it, including his godbrother, Bon Maharaj. One librarian friend had asked him, though, why not write books? Paper is thrown away, but a book is kept. So he said in 1958, he wrote Easy Journey to Other Planets. Then in 1960, he began the first canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, publishing the first part in 1962. In 1963 came part 2, and by the end of 64, part 3. Each printing was 1,100 copies, the cost donated by a wealthy business magnate. So Prabhupada was publishing, he got those three out. They were published by the League of Devotees. And October the 3rd, 1976, I was sitting with Prabhupada in his room again. And we were chatting about his earlier days. So I asked him if his godbrothers were helping him in any way. I did not take, he said. They wanted, but I did not like. I asked, did you ever think that at that time that you would be able to expand? Or I was trying to. It was a struggle at that time. At that time, I lived with some of my godbrothers, but I did not like, and I left their temple, and I was living alone. Then in Imlitala, you know, in Imlitala, Sabakunch, there is my godbrother's temple. So he had a temple in Delhi, in Karolbagh. So I left Jhansi, I came to Mathura, I lived there for a few months, then I went to Delhi. So in this way, here and there. I told him that Akshaya, that's Akshaya from here, I don't know whether you know him, he was Prabhupada's door guard when we were traveling in India. So I told him that Akshaya has been reading one of his original India printed Bhagavatams, the 1-1. And I was looking in the front, I told him, and it gives your address as your residence in Vrindavan and at Radhadamada and your office in Delhi. Prabhupada tipped his head from side to side. It was not unpleasant. When I was living alone, doing everything, it was not unpleasant. Very nice. Alone, everything I was doing. Rather, I had not so much anxiety for management. He said that his youngest son, Vrindavan Day, had come to live with him, but he had not liked that. I said, no, you don't. So they sent my family, you go and live with me. So he came twice or thrice. And the reason was that I asked him, if you want to live with me, then you have to live with me as sannyasi brahmachari. And he couldn't, I concluded. Prabhupada nodded. He was, you know, Prabhupada left home, then he took sannyas, and he told us that when his family heard that he'd taken sannyas, they said that it was like a thunderbolt had hit them. Even though he'd been, you know, away for many years, but actually taking sannyas, that was the cutoff. So they, you know, so what they did was the youngest boy, Vrindavan Chandra, I guess they felt now this is a burden. He can go and stay with his father. They were still trying to keep the connection. So they sent Vrindavan to Delhi to stay with Srila Prabhupada. And Prabhupada told him, you live like a brahmachari, otherwise you have to go home. So two or three times that Vrindavan was coming and going like this, Prabhupada kept sending him back. So Prabhupada nodded. Otherwise, I left home 1950. And then from 50 to 54, I lived in Jhansi. Now, it's interesting that previously Prabhupada said he retired in 54, but now he's saying that he left home in 1950. So maybe that retirement was when he officially took Vanaprastha, I don't know. So I'd noticed that in his old Bhagavatam, that it says that it was published by the League of Devotees. And I had also heard him, also heard that he had started the League of Devotees in Jhansi. So I asked if that was so. Prabhupada acknowledged. At that time, there were many students. So they were not my disciples, but they were coming. Like that Prabhakacharya. So I said, yes, that Prabhaka. Prabhupada said he was the head. So I asked if he was teaching Vaishnavism, and Prabhupada said, yes, I wanted to start from there. It was very nice, a big house. But this came Munshi's wife. She tactfully wanted me to go out, the governor's wife. So I had this very big house, but he peacefully took it. I could have fought, but I did not like to. So he was referring to the fact he had this nice property he was renting, but then he was forced out because Mrs. Munshi, her husband was the governor, and she had some women's league that she wanted to start up, and she took a fancy to the house. So by some maneuvering, she got Prabhupada out of the place. He reiterated what he had told us in Hyderabad, how Mrs. Munshi had put pressure on the building's manager by threatening not to renew a cinema license that he was holding if he didn't give her the building. The license has to be renewed from the collector, Prabhupada said. So the collector was insisting that you give that house to Lilavati Munshi. So indirectly, otherwise your license will not be issued. So they didn't leave you very much choice, I said. Prabhupada said, I thought, I cannot do anything tangible, that's a fact. So, somehow or another, I thought, let me go to Vrindavan. What is the use of fighting? Otherwise, all the big lawyers in Jhansi, they were my friends. So they said, you don't go, we shall arrange. But I thought, I've left my home, and now for this reason again, I'm going to litigation. I don't want this house. Let her do something. So that was, Prabhupada went off to Vrindavan. So I was still curious about the League of Devotees and what it actually was. Was that some God brothers that you joined up with, or was that just... No, after leaving Jhansi, I went to this God brother, he said, pointing to the photo of Keshava Maharaj. I lived there for a few months. Then I went to another God brother, that Imlital, and then Delhi. Then I left there, and I used to live alone in Delhi. Then I took one house at Kesigat. That's at the Bamsi Gopal temple. Then these Radha Damodar men, they called me that you can come and live here. We give you two rooms and we don't charge. We shall give you the place. So I came to the Radha Damodar, and then from the Radha Damodar temple, I went to the USA. Well, I was just wondering what exactly the League of Devotees was. I was very determined. I really wanted to find out. So Prabhupada started smiling. Oh, the league. Well, that was... I was trying to collect some devotees. Some of them, they were medical students. So they came and they used to live with me. But still, I lived there for 2 years, from 54 to 56. I had some surgical operation on my testicles there, and they were taking care. So some operation. So this Prabhakara, and they were not full-time. They were students, but they were living with me. But your Bhagavatams, I asked, it says that they were published by the League of Devotees. Does that mean just yourself, or were there others? Prabhupada started laughing. The League of Devotees, that was my organization. So therefore I gave that name. That League of Devotees, I was alone doing. Oh, but actually it was just you. Oh, okay, I was trying to understand who that could be. So Prabhupada went on. I am everything at that time. There were some students, but there were not any active. So I was doing everything. That League of Devotees means I am everything. I wanted to organize with this Prabhaka, Misra, and others, but they were not interested to devote their whole time. Just like this Prabhaka, still he comes to me, but if you ask him to do some full-time work, that he'll not do. Therefore, I did not initiate others. He was initiated. Haridas, he got that name. But they were all learned scholars in Sanskrit. So that was Prabhupada's first disciple. I guess probably 55 or 56 Prabhupada initiated him. Then no more. Until he came to the West in 66 he began again. So I asked if any of them apart from Prabhaka still come to see him. No, they're all practicing as medical men, he said. They were medical students. So now they're practicing. So sometime they came, long time ago it has passed. That was 56, 55, no, 54. So 20 years passed, more than 20 years. So that was a little insight. Prabhupada's publishing, and you know, his attempts to preach when he first left home. He got these Bhagavatams out, you know, as the League of Devotees, but actually it was just himself. And he was doing the BTG, everything himself, editing, writing, layout, buying the paper, getting the printing organized, selling them, everything. It was just Srila Prabhupada, nobody else, no helpers. So now, previously, Prabhupada had mentioned that about pleasing the higher authorities. So when we were here in London on July 26, Prabhupada got that new French Bhagavatam. And he talked with Bhagavan and Pritaputra and Harikesh. Then they all went out. So I was left alone with Srila Prabhupada in his room. And I got another further insight about Prabhupada's writing of the Bhagavatam. So Harikesh went out to attend to some work. I remained for a few minutes more alone with his divine grace. During the conversation, I had flipped through the pages of the new French Bhagavatam, and I had noticed a picture of Prabhupada's kitchen in the Radha Damodar temple in Vrindavan. So I now told him about it. "Oh, where is it?" he asked enthusiastically. I found the page for him. Opportunities don't arise like this don't arise frequently, so as he inspected the brownish photo, I asked a few questions about Prabhupada's life before ISKCON. So through that window you could see Rupa Goswami's Samadhi, and for those two rooms they were charging you 5 rupees a month? "Yes," Prabhupada said. "These rooms, they were broken, so they told me, you can repair these and whatever you like you can give." So I thought, don't need much space. And before me there was a tenant in the other room, and he was paying 3 rupees. So I thought, 2 rooms, but I spent my money, so I'll give him 5. So now I'm giving him 10 rupees. "To retain it," I said. "Yes," Prabhupada said. "Well, sometimes the devotees go down there and clean out the rooms," I told him, "and they have kirtan there sometimes. So I think this is the first book that somebody has included this photo." "Yes," Prabhupada said. "It was very calm and quiet, and people used to come and offer obeisances from outside because they knew. Practically everyone knew me, so they used to offer." "Oh, you were very well known in Vrindavan before you came to the West?" "Not very well known, but people knew me." "Because you were writing?" "Yes." "Or because of your ambition to come to the West?" "No, at that time there was no such thing," Prabhupada said. "I was living there, retired man." "So when you went to Vrindavan, you had given up the idea of coming to the West?" "No, coming to the West, the idea was there, but I was planning how to go, how to get there, how to preach there, how to take some books, how to bring, so everything alone." "So as soon as you had some books, then you were ready?" "Yes, then I decided." So everything was being dictated by superior. With Srila Prabhupada in such a congenial mood, I took the courage to broach something that Harikesh had once mentioned to me. "I was told that one day you were told by Rupa Goswami that you must go." Prabhupada's mood changed slightly. "But that was open secret," he said dismissively. "Everybody knew." And then he changed the subject. So, Harikesh, when I first came on the party, Harikesh had told me that at one point, apparently Rupa Goswami had appeared to Srila Prabhupada and given him instructions about going to the West. But he didn't know any of the details, and I couldn't find anybody else that knew anything. So I thought, you know, if I ever get the chance, I'm going to ask Srila Prabhupada. So when we were in London, then this was the opportunity. He started talking about the Radha Damodar rooms, and when he said everything was dictated by superior, I thought, this is the chance. So I asked him. So Prabhupada confirmed it, that Rupa Goswami directly told him, but he didn't want to give any information about it. So that was it. I never got the chance again to ask Srila Prabhupada about that incident. I mean, you can't just kind of go in and say, "Prabhupada, I really want to know about this." You have to wait. If he wants to talk about it, then you have your chance. Otherwise, not. So that was it. I never heard anything more. That was 76 until 2004. So how many years is that? Nearly 30 years. No. Yeah, 76, 30, 28 years. So in 2004, our god sister, Mulna Prakriti Dasi, she left the body actually in Vrindavan that year. Just before she left, she published this book called Srila Prabhupada, A Friend to All. Our Srila Prabhupada, A Friend to All. And I got that book and I read it, and I found this interview with this man called Gopal Chandra Ghosh. Now this book is a compilation of interviews with people that knew Prabhupada before he went to the West. So this man, Gopal Chandra Ghosh, he was 61 when the interview was done, so I figured he was about 20, yeah, when he met Srila Prabhupada at the Radha Damodar Mandir. He works at the Vrindavan Research Institute. So he relates this story, that there were several times I recall him telling me about his Guru Dev. Once he had a fever and he was sitting with it covered with a cloth and a blanket reading the Srimad Bhagavatam. I bowed my head to his feet and I asked, "You're not feeling well?" He said, "No, I have a cold, so this little medicinal cure, that will be helpful." So the next day when I returned, he was happy, healthy, and he was writing, maybe a commentary I did not see. So I asked, "Today you're feeling better?" So he answered very mysteriously, "Oh yes." So I asked him again and he said, "At night my Prabhupada came to me in my dream. He encouraged me saying, you do work like Narottam Thakur, like Srinivas Acharya and like Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Swami Maharaj told me joyfully, I have received mercy from my Gurudev. He has blessed me and he has given me power. I was too much anxious for the Bhagavat commentary." He said, "You just write and all the six Goswamis will help you." So he also mentioned then that his Gurudev had come in front of him in sannyas dress two or three times when he had been sickly. During these months, when I would visit him in his rooms at the Radha Damodar, he occasionally told me some special things that I understood as secrets in his bhajan. Once I came early in the morning in the winter time. He was chanting Harinam very deeply, and I saw tears coming from his eyes. When I inquired several times for him to tell me something, he said that he had received a visit last night. In the courtyard by Srila Rupa Goswami's Samadhi, he saw some very beautiful persons. One was wearing only kopin and was chanting on large tulasi mala around his neck. His eyes were large like lotus flowers and he was extremely effulgent. Also coming there was another personality, dressed similarly, but older and taller, very kindly to him. And behind them was a much younger sadhu whose beauty and sweetness were captivating. Swami Maharaj told me that they were Rupa Goswami, Srila Sanatan Goswami, and their nephew Srila Jiva Goswami. He said they spoke to him and gave him mercy and guidance for his writing and his future preaching. I tried to ask more, but this is all that he would tell me. So, that was, you know, it must have been 1960-61, just when Prabhupada was starting to write the Bhagavatam. He said, "I was too much anxious." And then, you know, the six Goswamis, three, or at least three of them, and his Guru Maharaj were appearing to him and giving him instructions how to write the Bhagavatam. So, you know, Prabhupada's writing is not at all in the mundane realm. It's not by scholarship or anything else. Even though, you know, we've read that he had, you know, this expertise in English and Sanskrit, but that's, you know, this is the real qualification. That he was on this level where he was actually, everything he said was being dictated by superior, and he meant that quite literally, not figuratively. Yeah. So it's it's 10 o'clock. Yeah. Well, let me just say one last thing here. Yeah? I just wanted, because this is important that we get this last little bit in. I've quoted now from this book, which, as I say, was a compilation of interviews by people that knew Prabhupada from before. I quote this because Prabhupada confirmed to me personally, you know, the truth of this incident when we were in London. So that's why I put it in there. But I want to sound a note of caution here, that readers should be careful what they accept as the truth. Because interviews of people recalling events from many years ago, sure, of course, should be taken very cautiously. Memories can be unreliable. And people also tend to be very motivated, yeah, in the recollections. You know, because so after somebody becomes famous, if they had any contact at all, then, oh yeah, I knew your Guru Maharaj, or I knew him before he became famous. And there's a classical, you know, example of this in the Leelamrita. Now, the Prabhupada Leelamrita was written, at least the first part, A Lifetime in Preparation, was based practically, you know, on many interviews that devotees had taken from different people they met in India. They were literally, you know, doing detective work, trying to track people down. So in the very last paragraph of the first volume of the Leelamrita is the description of Srila Prabhupada getting on the Jaladuta and sailing to the west. And, you know, as it's written in this, in the Leelamrita, it says, Mr. Bhattacharya, there's a man called Shishir Bhattacharya, and he's been quoted. So, Mr. Bhattacharya and Bhaktivedanta Swami took a taxi down to the Calcutta port. And then Bhattacharya says, he was alone, a lone fighter. When he left, there was no one on the shore to bid him goodbye. No friends, no supporter, no disciple, nobody. Even if you call me, I was not a disciple of his. I was a disciple of someone else. So I was not his follower. But due to shared love, I had very much respect for him. So I was the only person standing on the shore to say him goodbye. Nobody was with me. I could not know that it was such an important thing. That's the end of the first volume of the Leelamrita, and it's bogus. It never happened. It's a lie. Because later on, Srila Prabhupada's own diary came out in about 1992. Now this diary Prabhupada had been keeping before he got on the Jaladuta, when he was on the Jaladuta, and the early days in New York. It's called the Jaladuta Diary, and it's published by the archives. And it had been kept by Bali Mardan Prabhu. Prabhupada had given it to him for safekeeping in the early days of the movement. And then, you know, he kind of left. So for years he didn't know about the archives, and he had this diary of Prabhupada's with him, and then later on he finally gave it to the archives. So they published it. So when the Leelamrita was written, we didn't know about this diary. So anyway, the diary came out. This was, as I say, about 91, 92. And when I got a copy, the first section that I went to was, you know, the day that Prabhupada left for the West. I wanted to see what Prabhupada had written. So August the 12th, Thursday, Prabhupada put, to start for USA by MV Jaladuta from Calcutta Port, King George's Dock. Then the next day, August the 13th, Friday. So Prabhupada actually set sail to begin his mission on Friday the 13th. We think it was, you know, this myth, it's unlucky, but actually it was the luckiest thing that ever happened. Not luck, but anyway. So then Prabhupada writes in his diary, today at 9 a.m, embarked on MV Jaladuta. Came with me Bhagwati, the Darwan of Sindhya Sansir, Mr. Sen Gupta, Mr. Ali, and Brindavan. That Brindavan is his son, Brindavan Chandra. The cabinet is quite comfortable. It is the owner's residence, and therefore the sitting room, the bedroom, and the bath and privy are all equipped with first-class materials. Everything is nice in the first-class compartment, and thanks to Lord Sri Krishna for his enlightening Sumati Mararaji for all of these arrangements. I am quite comfortable. So Prabhupada names at least five people that were there at the docks to see him off. And this rascal saying, nobody was there. Nobody was there to see him off and say him goodbye. Only I was there. I could not know it was such an important thing. So, you have to be careful what you take as, you know, truth with these interviews and things like this. If you can't verify it, then I have the tendency, all right, maybe the sentiment's nice, but, you know, everything else, you know, we don't necessarily have to believe. So, okay, I think that we should finish there tonight. It's getting very late. And we'll continue tomorrow evening, same time?
Same time.
Okay, and we'll continue on. with more statements by Prabhupada about his writing. You had a question, Prabhu?
Just about Bhaktisiddhanta Ji. When you read his books, the English is absolutely high level. You need a dictionary. Every other word is such...
Srila Bhaktisiddhanta.
For Bhaktisiddhanta to appreciate Srila Prabhupada, what is it that he would have appreciated in Prabhupada's writing? That he himself was...
Prabhupada said that he appreciated how he had understood the philosophy. Especially that poem, when he, I think the fourth verse, where Prabhupada talks about impersonal calamity, thou hast moved, or removed. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he especially liked that, because that was his real mission, to destroy the impersonalists, mm-hmm. or the impersonal understanding. So he liked, you know, Prabhupada's expression, not just because it was poetic, but because he was very expert in explaining the philosophy. And he said he has understood the mission. Actually, in 1977, we were in Calcutta. Myself and Abhiram were in Prabhupada's room with him. Abhiram was the temple president at that time. And Prabhupada was talking about his relationship with his spiritual master. And he said, you know, he had a close relationship with him, although he didn't spend a lot of time with him. But he said, my spiritual master was always very friendly and kind to me. And he said one time, one of his godbrothers had said, fools rush in where angels fear to tread. They were a little surprised at how intimate Prabhupada's dealings were with his spiritual master. And many of the, you know, the Gaudiya Math preachers, they were afraid of their spiritual master because he was so heavy. And they were afraid to even bring people to him because Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, you know, would give him the sauce. So they saw then now this Grihastha. Yeah, they used to call them Kacha Grihastas. Yeah, rotten Grihastas. So, this Grihastha, how he's having such a relationship with Guru Maharaj. Fools rush in where angels fear to tread. Warning. And then Prabhupada told us, he said, so I thought, well, fool I may be, but that's my relationship with my spiritual master. So then Abhiram asked Prabhupada, did your spiritual master know that you would go on to do what you've done? And Prabhupada said yes. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta recognized it in Prabhupada. And in 1935, when they were in Radhakund, that same time when he talked about the Gaudiya Math burning down, he had been approached by Sridhar Maharaj and others that they just started this Bombay Center. And Prabhupada had played a very important role in raising the funds for that and organizing it. And so they had recommended to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta that Prabhupada be made the temple president of the new Bombay Gaudiya Math. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta said no. He said he is better off outside of your company. He said later on he will do everything himself. And Prabhupada said, when my Guru Maharaj said that, he said, I thought, how is this? Guru Maharaj is saying that I'll do everything, and he said, I couldn't understand it at that time. I had no idea. But Srila Bhaktisiddhanta knew right from the very beginning. He recognized him. All right, so I think that we should finish now. Srila Prabhupada Ki.